Okay, Hare Krishna. This is noon, and on the 27th of the month, right now, I'm thinking that Lord Jagannath chariots are rumbling down the main road in Puri toward the Gudicha temple. Indradumna Maharaj and Radhanath Maharaj probably with quite a few devotees over there at the present time. I've just been thinking about that event all day long. We have our festivals, Rath Yatra festivals internationally. However, just the tradition, the wonder of Jagannath Puri itself, the extraordinary participation of millions of people, the size of the carts, and Lord Jagannath's enormous presence, along with Lady Balaram and Lady Subhadra and Lord Balaram, make that Rath Yatra really an extraordinary event, something that I've not yet seen, but I would like to see in this lifetime. But at least we can all think about it and remember that Rath Yatra festival, particularly that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu participated in the festival many times with his eternal associates, some of whom were residing there with him in Puri, and the others who came to be with him from Navadvip. Jagannath Balaram Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai, Rath Yatra festival Ki Jai. Okay, today I'm going to answer some questions, but before I do, just a few things about the many questions which have been coming in. Firstly, if you could spell properly, it makes it easier for me to understand what you're trying to say. And for further comprehension, once again, if devotees practice how to formulate their thoughts into brief, few-line questions. Some devotees are doing that. Others just go on, and it doesn't make it any clearer. So this is a practice that all of you should engage in writing, that in order to understand what you're trying to say and to communicate what you're trying to say, it really, really helps if you figure out how to write it down as briefly as possible. Other devotees are also sending me some letters and some thoughts. I don't have time to reply to these, and therefore I'm not. So if you're sending me certain realizations, I read them, I appreciate them, and some letters, I also take note of them. But these being sent to the podcast are information for me, but not something that I'm going to reply to. If you want to reply to letters, then please send me a written letter via the post and not email to my email address to New Brajadam, and I will reply to those. There's some other good themes like book distribution, and Radha Govinda Prabhu asked that we talk about the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava, which would probably take up more than just one podcast. I'll come to those later, but today let's read some questions. Here's a question from Gornitai Prabhu, who's serving in France, helping out with Radha Parasishwara Seva. And this is an example of a roll-on question that I'm going to have to decipher and summarize in the following way. Why was it that Drupad Maharaj told Dronacharya, when he came to him for half the kingdom, that the past friendship wasn't valid because they're not on equal terms, or they weren't equals? So Gornitai Prabhu posits different theories and premises on this, but basically the reason that Drupad Maharaj had said that was that he was distinguishing himself as a wealthy king from a poor Brahmin. In other words, on the basis of wealth, he made a judgment of equality or non-equality, and that it was a material consideration for which Dronacharya had right to be upset. Furthermore, whether Dronacharya was poor or not, he was also a Brahmin, and as a Brahmin, and being a strict Brahmin, he was in a superior position than the king. So for the king to say that they weren't equals, in other words, to say that Dronacharya was inferior, was really an insult, and really showed that Drupad Maharaj, at least at that time, wasn't in his right state of mind. Jagannath Sutta, Prabhu is giving a long realization about his challenges in the Grihastha Ashram, and because there's no real question involved, there's nothing for me to answer over there other than to make a slight clarification. And that clarification is that we should distinguish between the activities of chanting, hearing about Krishna, and the maintenance of our families. Both are devotional activities, that is, provided that our families are devotees and we're maintaining them. In this case, that's the case. However, one does not replace the other. In other words, maintaining our families does not replace our responsibility to chant and hear. And obviously, simply by chanting and hearing, you don't maintain your family. So devotees should somehow or another learn how to do the balance of these two things in order to be balanced grihasthas. Then from Soho Street, Sopakarni, Devi Dasi is quoting a class by Sachinandan Maharaj, who was emphasizing that devotees should take into consideration three very important factors: taste for the holy name, service to Vaishnavas, and giving mercy to all souls. So she says that sometimes one of these factors is prominent and the others are either missing or in the background. Yes, it's good if all of these things are in the balance, but even if you're doing one at a time or one of them is prominent, that's still good. However, chanting Hare Krishna is an activity that all Vaishnavas must do, and if they do that properly, then they distribute Krishna consciousness to others in some way or another. And because we live in the association of Vaishnavas, therefore we serve them. So it shouldn't be too difficult a thing to keep a balance between all of these three activities. These are really wonderful things, particularly Namaruchi and Chivadhoi. These are things that Thakur Bhaktivinoda specifically repeats over and over again. And of course, Vaishnava Seva, where can you go without serving the Vaishnavas? And very often we will find that sometimes three items are emphasized. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also emphasized, in addition to this, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and worshipping deities. So devotees should learn how to do many things at one time. That is the meaning of being expert, one of the 26 qualities. So it isn't that we should just concentrate on one thing and exclude other things. And that's how we live also in this world. You have to eat, you have to sleep, you have to drink, you have to breathe. It isn't that because you concentrate on eating, you forget about all of the other things. So they all go in a proper sequence. In the same way, we should organize our lives, structure our lives, that all of these activities, and here these three very important activities that Sachinandan Maharaj was emphasizing, that all of them are fulfilled, and we're doing them regularly to the satisfaction of the Lord. She asks another important question, and that is about perfect grihastras whose life and soul is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that in today's society it's not easy to find devotees like that, and there are many divorces and devotees are losing faith in the shelter of the grihastha ashram. Unfortunately, Srila Prabhupada was also quite dissatisfied with the status of the grihasthas, even at the time of his departure in 1976-1977. Nonetheless, it's our duty to set that type of proper example that will inspire others. And while it may be a fact that there are many problem cases in the grihastha ashram, I personally know of many exemplary grihasthas. For instance, here in Paris, Adhikarta Prabhu is here with me, who's been happily married for a long time. He's ace book distributor. He's a wonderful preacher, talks to anyone that he meets about Krishna and tries to convince them to become devotees. His wife, Ruchira, is a great cook and a devotee, and there are many examples like that. But no doubt our background and the environment, and it's not just in the West, even in India now, divorce is a common thing, as well as so many of the defects that Kali Yuga marriages represent. The influence of the environment makes it extremely difficult for devotees to kickstart a culture where there's no divorce, where husband and wife stay together out of duty, where they follow regulative principles and chant 16 rounds, where they somehow or another direct their children to also become Krishna conscious, and the subsequent generations are successful in that. Everything will not happen all at once, but if we maintain fidelity and determination to Srila Prabhupada's mission, and if grihasthas have faith in the principles that Srila Prabhupada gave us and remain principle-oriented, even though there may be difficulties in the beginning, eventually there will be more and more grihasthas, more and more subsequent generations who embody the teachings that Srila Prabhupada gave us, and ultimately it will become a culture, it will become a broad culture, and that will start to snowball and affect society around us. But it will take more than perhaps our lifetime, it may take many lifetimes. Nonetheless, yadiracharati sheshtas, we should show the example, whatever other devotees are doing or not doing. Tarun Krishna, also in Soho Street, he's asking, why do we wear the saffron color? The color saffron, and since when has this tradition been taking place? Wow, that's a really nice, brief, one-line, two-word question. The tradition of wearing saffron is, as far as I know, goes back as long as there have been renunciates or people in the renounced order of life. It's common to different schools in India, and now even without, both Vaishnav, non-Vaishnavs, Buddhists, Maivadis, yogis, they traditionally wear the saffron cloth, and that saffron is meant to represent the color of the rising sun, which is in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Gyaninastutadagyanam tesham nashitam atmana. That just like the sun rises in the morning, and when it does, it dispels the darkness. In the same way, transcendental knowledge rises, all darkness is dispelled. So those who wear saffron are meant to represent this principle, that they have realized the futility of material existence, that they no longer find happiness in this material world, because the sun of Krishna is rising within their hearts, and therefore for them, Krishna is the only family member, Krishna is the only goal, Krishna is the only value that they find in this material world. And the last question comes from Manjari Devidasi in Budapest, and she says that recently Kamsari and Megha Manjari, Kamsari is in charge of our downtown preaching center in Budapest. Both are downtown, but this downtown one is the annex to the restaurant. And they had wedding rings where they had the names of Gornitai engraved within the ring, and I told them it wasn't a good idea. So she asks, I would like to ask, what's the difference between the written form of the name and the chanted? As from the story of Gopal Guru Goswami, we learn that the holy name can be chanted in every circumstance. You've also said that shlokas may be learnt in the bathroom written on a piece of paper, which often contains names of the Lord. Okay, so we should see that different forms of the name are appropriate for different things. So whereas Chaitanya Mahaprabhu agreed that even in the toilet one can chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, nonetheless, one should not take the name of the Lord in written form into the toilet, because that then is improper. Just like, for instance, one would not take a picture of the Lord into the toilet, because that form of the name doesn't belong over there. The bathroom would still be all right. My concern was that if the names of Gornitai are taken into the toilet, then that's not really appropriate. And I would say the same for shlokas. If devotees take shlokas into the bathroom, that's one thing, although it's not the cleanest of places, and put it on the mirror. But if they're taking it into the toilet, then that's not a good thing. So, and if your toilet is in the bathroom without any separation, then you shouldn't take such shlokas in there. We should recognize this, that different forms of the Lord have different rules associated with them, rules of worship, rules of respect. As for instance, we have pictures of deities, and the pictures of the deities we deal with in somewhat a different way than we deal with the deities themselves, the three-dimensional deities. In one sense they're not different, but in another sense they are. For instance, we will eat in front of pictures of deities, but we won't eat in front of the deities themselves. And if we have deities on our altar, then we have to have a certain standard of worship for them, whereas if we have picture as our main focus of our altar without the deities, then the standard is much more lax and lenient. And the same is there for the different forms that the holy name takes place. They should be given due respect according to the forms that they manifest. All right, I'm going to stop now and send this message off to Chaitanya Chandraprabhu. And you'll be interested to know that we're redesigning the entire website for it to be a complete interactive Krishna conscious experience that has, well, I'll talk about it a little more the next day, otherwise I may take too much time right now. All the best to everyone, and have a wonderful day today, and don't forget, Jagannath's on the cart. Meditate upon pulling that rope, and that will guarantee our absorption in the Lord's lotus feet and success in going back home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna.